Comic Dorks is made possible by you guys by going to patreon.com/frogpants. The entire network benefits from your generosity. We'd like you to become our boss. If you like shows like Comic Dorks and you want to see more stuff like this, support us at patreon.com/frogpants.
Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks.
Thrilling adventure, intense excitement, pounding action, and spine-tingling mystery.
Welcome back to Comic Dorks, episode 23 of Comic Dorks, where we talk about comic books, the industry surrounding it, and other things connected therein. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Steven Schleicher.
Hello.
Hello, Steven. We're it, man. This is it. Two of us.
What?
Yeah, I know. Weird, right?
Oh, man.
Scott Kurtz had a thing, and he couldn't make it this week. He'll be back next time, he said, for sure.
Yep.
We've not heard from Mark. He may pop in. I just haven't been able to get a hold of him. So busy people, man. That's what this is. But we decided some time ago, the show goes on regardless, unless it's just me alone, then that's real dumb. Nobody wants to hear me do this on my own.
Well, wait, you've got a whole podcast where it's just you talking.
This is true. I actually have a few of them, but you know what it is? You can start that way,
but
you can never midstream change it to be that. In fact, here's a little tidbit of podcasting info for you, folks. If you'd like to start your own podcast, don't start a group cast and then turn it into a solo cast later. I think that's trouble.
Yeah.
The other way around can work, you know, start solo, add voices, but not so much. But it's all good, man. I just heard from Mark. Oh, they're having something done to their house today and are not able to come. Not a problem. I'm going to reply and say, no, look at this real time podcasty sort of information people are getting. We are open. We are free. Here on the podcast. Anyway, it's good to be here. We're going to talk about some stuff. There's plenty to discover and talk about. So let's do that right now.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
Besides, Steven Schleicher here is the brains of the operation, see?
Yeah, whatever.
Sometimes. So Marvel, who's always got their hand in some movie, comic to movie cookie jar idea, because that's their business now. Seems like, anyway. I mean, it's funny because I feel there are days where I feel like the comics are such an afterthought.
Yes.
But still, they have to have it or else this other stuff isn't, you know, doesn't have the same cycle as it would if you didn't have the comic end of things. But apparently they are working on a Civil War movie, and that just makes me think about how expensive such a thing might be.
Well, so this is really, really weird. For the last couple of days and really since right before the New York Comic Con and then after, Marvel has tweeted out and sent us teaser images. At the New York Comic Con, they announced that Secret Wars, they were going to have an all-new Secret Wars event come out in 2015.
Yeah.
Then then yesterday they tweeted out this Civil War summer of 2015, and it's the same covers that we saw, you know, 6 years ago or 10 years ago, whenever Civil War was going on, the big event that pitted superhero against superhero and the Superhero Registration Act. And then today they tweeted out something that had like the Age of Ultron meets Marvel Zombies as something that's coming in 2015. Oh, and so, man. You know, some people are like, oh, they're reprinting Civil War and putting it out, and they're redoing Secret Wars and putting it out. But here's where the Civil War stories gets really, really weird. So yesterday, Variety broke the news that Robert Downey Jr. will be reprising his role as Tony Stark / Iron Man in the Captain America 3 movie that's coming out in 2016, and that this will be the first part of a Civil War movie adaptation for Marvel Studios.
They'll cross it over. Well, I mean, they did a bit of that leading up to Avengers with small story bits, but I did not expect. I heard about this, and I also heard he was asking or was going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million for his appearance.
Yeah, so apparently, according to what Variety has sussed out, now they haven't gotten confirmation from his agency rep, or from Marvel Studios. Apparently, he's getting $40 million for his appearance in Captain America 3, plus a bunch of back-end points. And if Captain America 3 performs better than Captain America the Winter Soldier, he'll get a bonus on top of that. So that's really kind of a big deal. And part of this was he was just scheduled to appear in a bit part in the Captain America 3 movie. And then when it was discovered that it was going to be kind of Civil War tie-in or create a Civil War event throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he wanted to have a much larger role. And so the negotiations back and forth went. Of course, Marvel is notorious for being cheap with their money. But Kevin Feige apparently went and convinced everyone that he's got this vision for a 7-picture Civil War deal.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Because
that you're not going to do those every 6 months. That's you're talking about years of a storyline potentially.
Well, we know that Marvel has 11 movies slated between now and 2019.
Yeah.
We know that one of them is Ant-Man.
Yeah, we do know
we
that.
We know that one of them is Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. We know that one of them is the sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy.
And is this counting Avengers 2 next year as well?
This is counting Avengers 2 next year.
Okay. Wow.
So, you know, this could then spin off into the Avengers 4 movie, lead into the Avengers 4 movie.
This is new actors, dude. There's no way this is the current cast. There's no way. Like, there's no way that Tony, I mean, maybe leading up to it in this
right.
Captain America 3 bit and all that.
Right.
But I think at some point, if you're talking about that many movies and this far into the future, there's no way it's still Robert Downey Jr. at that point. First of all, maybe he can do it. I don't know. This is unprecedented.
If this is truly what's going on. Now, it could just be that Marvel is just re-releasing Civil War or re-updating it for their new readers or whatever.
Yeah.
But when all of this falls into place, here's the other thing that points to Civil War being a movie. Now, there's lots of rumors, and I don't like to report on rumors at majorspoilers.com.
Yeah, you like to spoil real things that are spoilerable.
Exactly. But there has been talk around the water cooler that Sony and Marvel have been talking about sharing Spider-Man in a movie project projects. Yeah,
that was my big question, because I don't know how you do the Civil War storyline and not have Spider-Man in it.
That was the big to do, because originally Spider-Man was, yes, a superhero act, mm-hmm. and he goes in front of the world and unmasks himself and says that he's Peter Parker. And that was a big to do when Civil War was going on. And then, of course, midway through, Peter Parker saw what was going on and switched allegiances in that story.
Right.
You can't tell Civil War without Peter Parker being that central character of the unmasking, because everyone knows who Iron Man is. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows who Captain America is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Who is the character that you can unmask? You can't. Hawkeye's out there. Black Widow's out there. The Incredible Hulk? I don't think so.
Right. I didn't think about that either. So there's all sorts of very important. I mean, the whole point of Civil War is the unmasking of the heroes. That's the entire impetus for the political intrigue around it. Like, everything about it is revealing who these people are, and you've already got most of your, at least on the Marvel side, most of these characters, everybody knows who they are. You're totally right about that. Spider-Man would have to, I mean, maybe they have time over at Sony. If they truly were going to share the character, they could do the unveiling.
Well, and we've already seen that they're sharing Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Is that Sony or is that Fox? Whoever.
That's Fox. Well, we don't know about Scarlet Witch, do we? Oh, no, I guess it would have been Fox, because she was in that final scene with the mm-hmm. stuff. So that is Fox, mm-hmm. yeah. So in other words, it's not unprecedented that these studios could work out a deal to share characters. Yes. But to share, I get sharing ancillary smaller role characters, but sharing your big, beefy, number one box office mm-hmm. known name, that's really crazy.
Well, speaking of no name, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 didn't do super well at the box office. No. Now, it didn't lose money, but it also didn't break box office records.
Mm-hmm.
Sony Entertainment, or Sony as a corporation, is suffering financially. Maybe not in some of their divisions, but they have closed up some of their other divisions because of the poor performance.
Yeah.
So if Disney came along and said, hey, we want to give you $30 million to let us use Spider-Man in our movie, or maybe we can work together in Sony in this big Civil War arc. You've got Captain America 3, then you can have the Spider-Man, and we'll make sure that we work together for that Spider-Man portion of it. And then it comes back around and wraps up with the Avengers 4.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, who knows what kind of deals are going on.
Such a crazy time, though. I mean, just think about what we're saying here. Like, what we've done is we've turned, you know, this kind of ridiculous. Well, it's a really good story. Don't get me wrong, but it's a comic book story.
Right.
And we've basically moved it into the world of incredible high finance, incredible mm-hmm. amounts of money, important mm-hmm. like economic decisions are based around whether or not Spider-Man can hang out with the other guys. Like, it's the weirdest, what a weird thing. to even talk about, you know?
Well, but here's the other thing. Marvel teased this particular image of Captain America and Iron Man pulling on Iron Spider, Peter Parker in that costume.
Yeah.
There are many other covers from Civil War that show Iron Man and Captain America fighting each other face to face.
Yeah, big time.
If that was going to be your teaser and you weren't planning on doing anything with Spider-Man, why would you use that image of Spider-Man in that series?
Yeah, that does seem to support the theory.
Yeah. Now, again, I could be totally wrong on this, but when you see these things kind of lining up and you look at the way the vectors are moving, it looks like we're going to get a Civil War movie and that Marvel is going to do a Civil War event in the comics leading up to that 2016 release.
Yeah, I could see this. And I also think it's a really awesome story. And in fact, it's reminiscent of what was great about Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier was that same kind of, multi-level political thriller, 70s era kind of style thing. Mm-hmm. And more of that is welcome for me. I'm all about that. But it just seems crazy. The whole idea seems crazy.
Here's the thing that I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the Marvel Cinematic Universe splits off into multiple storylines. So you've got your big Infinity Gauntlet event, which features all your cosmic heroes, your Thors, your Guardians of the Galaxy. To a lesser extent, it could even feature Doctor Strange if you needed to. Yeah. And then you have this event that features your superheroes, your non-spacey, magic-y superheroes, and whatever they're calling their new mutant, because we know that they're working on something within humans.
Yeah.
You put that in there, and you could have two separate storylines.
Yeah.
But if there's one thing that we've seen Marvel do time and time again, is that with big events, whether it's Civil War, whether it be a Secret Invasion, whether it be, whatever the next big thing is that they have going on, X-Men, Avengers, Axis, they force that storyline into all the books across their publishing line, forcing people who don't give a crap about Civil War to have to read a Civil War story in their Squirrel Girl comic.
Right? I forgot. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing is everybody got Civil War treatment pretty much.
Yeah. So what would happen if that's the theory that Marvel goes into with their movies in that, well, if people are going to watch this, they're going to have to watch all 7 movies to understand what's going on.
Yeah, you did. I mean, I know there were primers out there saying, here are the 6 absolute must-reads of the series, and the rest of it you can probably get away. I mean, probably not that few, but you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like catching up on Doctor Who. Here are all the episodes you should see that matter, and the rest is gravy.
Right.
You can do that. But when they're preparing, I mean, here's what I would suspect. Whatever this movie is, whether it's a series of films or one movie, they're going to water this thing way down.
Oh, it'll have to be.
Yeah, it's a movie.
It'll have to be.
Already watered down.
Even if it's 2 or 3 movies, they have to water it down.
Yeah. I'm interested, though.
So am I. I think it's fascinating. Like I said, this is just some crazy what ifs of two comic lovers sitting around having a conversation. But all signs point to Civil War movie.
When did Civil War? I feel like it's not that old, and we speak of it as if it's this old thing, but it's like 06, 07 maybe?
That's what I want to say, because it was right around the same time that Major Spoiler started.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Civil War, 2006, 2000, so it was actually both years.
Yeah.
Story built around 7 titled, 7-issue limited series written by Mark Miller and produced by penciled by Stephen McNiven. And I forgot that was Mark Miller.
Yeah.
Why did I not know that? His other work is so different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why. I mean, whatever. It's going to, if whatever comes out of this, we win, I suppose. It seems really ambitious. If Tony Stark is really getting that kind of money for what can really be tantamount to a somewhat cameo, unless it's like Black Widow level.
Yeah, no, this is more than just, Captain America showing up in the Thor movie as Loki in disguise. This is more than that. This is, Robert Downey Jr. playing a significant part in the Captain America 3 movie.
Okay. Well, watch for more. We will certainly be talking about it here. So, I keep wanting to bring up Salt Lake. New York Comic Con ended this weekend.
Yes.
Ended yesterday, not forever, just for this year. And there's talk it was bigger than San Diego. What the hell happened in New York?
Senior Vice President Lance Fensterman put out the number, 151,000 unique attendees.
Wow.
151,000 unique attendees. San Diego Comic-Con, of course, caps out at 130,000 unique attendees.
Yeah.
Technically, according to this article, New York Comic-Con beat out San Diego Comic-Con last year with 133,000 attendees.
So that puts out Salt Lake in third, does it?
Well, I don't know what the final numbers are.
We heard still that, don't know. It seems a little fishy, doesn't it?
We heard that Salt Lake City was bigger than San Diego, so it could be the second largest.
Well, you'd think they'd have the numbers by now. It's almost like 2-3 months ago. What are they doing over there, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if part of the lawsuit is them kind of keeping mum on some of this stuff or not.
Yeah.
Because they are still moving ahead with that lawsuit.
Yeah, that's all happening regardless.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with New York Comic Con. This is great that 151,000 people showed up. And you would expect that. There's more people concentrated on the East Coast than the West Coast. Thing is, all the comic book publishers, except for Marvel, well, I shouldn't say all of them, but a large number of comic book publishers have moved west.
Yeah.
I don't think...
DC being the biggest deal, right? Because they moved, them moving to California from New York right is crazy, crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. George Clooney showed up to talk about Tomorrowland. You did have some big names in attendance, but you're not going to see the New York Comic Con turn into this big movie, TV show spectacle that the San Diego Comic Con has become because it's too far to fly everybody.
Right, right. It's the LA proximity in San Diego is really what makes that thing a big deal for them.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I agree with that. None of them will be. Like unless Hollywood moves somewhere else. San Diego's got the lock on that, I think, in a lot of ways.
Well, California is desperately trying to keep Hollywood productions in state now.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, because too much Canada, man. They can't have all that
too
Canada.
Too much Canada, Australia, Louisiana, you know, everywhere else.
Atlanta is killing
Atlanta.
It. Yeah, Salt Lake used to be huge. I don't know what happened. We quit doing tax benefits or something. I was going to say something about that. You just briefly mentioned that Land of Tomorrow deal. Leading up to that, I really had no expectation. I saw the trailer. The trailer looks neat. But my impression's like, oof, really? This is like Pirates, except even more of a stretch where you're going to take a part of Disneyland and turn it into a film and have a story. And, you know, kind of not really all that pumped about it until I read that Brad Bird is directing.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting that just the mere mention of Brad Bird being tied to a project turns me around 180 degrees?
You know what I found fascinating is, and I'd forgotten that Brad Bird was involved, but the minute you see the logo and it's that yellow and orange and red with the black Tomorrowland in front of it, looks just like the Incredibles logo.
Yeah, it kind of does, right?
Same color scheme, same same feel.
Well, they're all owned by the same people, so
yes,
who knows?
Are. Yes,
they
are.
At some point, everything that is ever made will be made by Disney somehow. And the house that Mouse built, man, just tearing it up. Anyway, I do want to see it now because, again, Brad Bird holds a lot of sway with me.
He does.
Just an incredible director, no pun intended. And I still think The Iron Giant is a masterpiece. And
that is such an underrated movie.
Yeah, it really is. I loved his Mission Impossible movie. I think he's great.
That was really good. I was more surprised at how good Mission Impossible was.
Yeah, almost squished Hawkeye in that one scene. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Really good.
Good times. We got a first look at Daredevil. We talked about this on TMS. I know you guys have been talking about it over there. No major spoilers, but my complaint stands. I'm sure this Charlie Cox guy is fine, but I think that dark suit is even fine. I just don't know why that promo photo is virtually unlookable. I can't even see what the hell's going on there. There's a floating face.
Yeah, it's really
face.
Dark.
It's bad.
And in the Daredevil Man Without Fear miniseries, Matt Murdock was wearing this black...
That's the series.
Jumpsuit, yeah.
Okay, because we were trying to figure out who else or where else that came from, but that's the one.
Frank Miller, John Romita Jr. did this, and there's this whole sequence where he's running around essentially in a tracksuit with a scarf tied around his head.
Yeah.
And killing it. So this is definitely telling. We've seen before the logo, and we said that looked very much from the 1970s or the reboot of the series when Frank Miller came in and did everything with Daredevil Reborn. Now we're getting this Frank Miller Man Without Fear take. This could be an interesting series.
Yeah.
Plans on Netflix.
The photo, one thing it doesn't show, I'm fine with Black Ninja Mask and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not using his nunchuck rope stick thing.
That we can see.
Yeah, that we can see. I assume that it'll be his weapon of choice, though, right? It's got to be.
I would imagine it's got to be. He's got to be throwing something around.
I'm looking at
if you look closely, coming off of his backside, there's something hanging there.
Hey, maybe it's his doodle. I don't know what's going on.
No, that'd be his front side.
Oh, okay. Well, he's daring. He's the Daredevil after all. I was looking at the first issue, the April 1964 cover of The Origin of Daredevil by Jack Kirby, who penciled, Bill Everett, who inked, and Stan Lee, who presumably came up with the character along with Bill Everett. He's credited as such anyway. There was a thing in those early Stan Lee days where all the characters look like an X-Man. Do you know what I mean? And he just looks like another X-Man to me.
Mm-hmm.
With his little, I mean, he's got his horns and he's got the red D and stuff, but he may as well be at the school for advanced whatever. What's it called?
Mutant kinds. I don't know.
What is it?
Special. I don't know.
Special needs.
Xavier School for gifted children.
For gifted children. That's it. Not for Xavier School for people with ice vision or whatever. Anyway, so that's coming. Watch for that. Netflix. What's the release? When do we know that's coming out? We don't.
It's coming up next year.
Next year. Sometime.
2015.
2015. Also, you mentioned Secret Wars. Anything else about Secret Wars in 2015 that we
just
know about?
That they have this whole new Secret Wars event, and it's tied into the toy companies again. So we're going to see Hasbro come up with a whole new line of toys, and Sideshow Collectibles is involved in this as well. Hmm. So not only are we going to get a Secret Wars event, of course, the big original Secret Wars was a big toy tie-in promotion.
87 or 86 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so now we're going to kind of see the same thing happen, and I hope it works.
I interviewed Chris Metzen of Blizzard fame, and had a wonderful conversation. If people haven't heard that interview, you really owe it to yourself. If you like creative people and you want to kind of hear some of that passion just explode in your ears, I think that episode was really great, and you can get it at theinstance.net. But anyway, during that conversation, he had pointed to Secret War as, I think it was Secret War. Now that I know my brain's trying to remember, but I think that's what he had done. But he had pointed to that as being one of his top three inspirations ever for what he does for a living. And he even acknowledged the fact that this was such a toy tie-in that mm-hmm. it shouldn't have been such an inspiration. It was such a marketing move, you know, that it shouldn't have had all of that power. It's kind of like being inspired by Count Chocula every year or something, you know, because it's just so artificial. But he says that it just was this huge thing. My guess is there's a whole generation of people who were all kids like us then who were affected by that series who are super stoked to hear anything's happening with Secret War, even though it is a big toy tie-in.
Yeah, and of course, everybody thinks Secret War, and then they think of the follow-up, Secret War 2, or whatever it was, which a lot of people wish they could forget.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But, you know, the thing that I think about Secret War was really cool was the fact that there were all these little toys. And we didn't have a whole lot of superhero toys back then.
Yeah. It's all Star Wars stuff then.
Star Wars stuff was probably and some G.I. Joe stuff.
Sure.
But nothing for the superhero fan, except for those Mego figures, stuff that was really big, stuff that really didn't fit into regular 3 3/4 inch playability. So seeing that happen, and if they're going to do something like that again, I think it could be good. But on the other hand, there, you know, I can still go down the toy aisle and there are tons of Marvel action figures on the shelves. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that these things don't get lost.
Yeah. You know, it's real big I notice at the Target and the Walmart when I'm in there is the big, tall. It's like 4 feet tall, those things.
Yeah, 2.5, 3 feet. Yeah.
Those are big, especially DC stuff. I see a lot of Superman. There's a Hulk one, I think I saw.
Mm-hmm.
They have pretty cool.
They have a brand new line for Star Wars Rebels now, or just Star Wars, so you can get the Stormtroopers and Darth Vader and the Star Wars Rebels characters.
Ooh.
That's crazy expensive, though, for those.
Yeah, but I wouldn't mind. I have a thing for Stormtroopers of any type, and I've tried to grab everything I've ever, you know, something comes along, I get it. They had a 12-inch one that was super articulated and had, like, the black cloth underneath the armor was actual cloth, and
yeah.
I love that thing. Anytime there's a clone trooper or stormtrooper, I'm sort of in. So yeah, if I see one of those, probably end up having to justify it.
If you're a toy fan, and here's where the interesting part about this story comes in. Sideshow Collectibles, yeah, they do the big statues and they do the really cool figures. But where they really excel is their partnership with Hot Toys, which are the ones that do these 1/6 scale, super articulated figures that just look super realistic.
Those are cool.
I think it would be very cool. They've recently come out with a Black Widow 1/6 scale. They just announced Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be their new one that comes out in March.
Nice.
Just imagine if they did the whole Secret Wars in that 1/6 scale line, super articulated, super realistic, details beyond belief.
Oh, man.
Oh, people are going to be buying those.
Well, how, but much, they do have, how much are those? Like the Black Widow one? What's that?
The Black Widow, I know that, I don't remember what the Black Widow one, I want to say like $169, $199, something like that. The Star-Lord one that's coming up is $249, and they have a 1/6 scale Marty McFly from Back to the Future, which I think was $250, something like that. And they also have the 1/6 scale DeLorean, which was $600.
Wow. Yeah. So it occurs to me, you know, we always talk about how comic books are heading toward a time where they're just not valuable anymore because anything made after like 92 is just in such abundance that there's right. no point. And right. moving forward with so much digital, it's like, well, what's, you know, what are we even doing here? But it occurs to me that these kinds of things that you're describing here are the things that will be worth the money.
I think so. I think those are the things because they are limited edition. A lot of the statues that I've purchased are 500 or less, 1500 or less.
Yeah.
And they are super well crafted. You do have to spend some money, but 20 years from now, when everybody else's are broken and mine are still in a box somewhere or been sitting on a shelf for 20 years, those are going to be worth something.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be cool. Sell those for a chunk of change. It just it's an interesting way to keep that part of the business alive. Mm-hmm. While the comic part of it won't probably. There's still going to be a lot of money for anybody who finds an untouched Superman one or whatever. That'll always be a thing. But if if you're saying to me, dude, I got a Spawn number 80.
Yeah, no one's going to give a crap.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. Merchandising is where it's at as far as the studios and the publishers making their money. But limited edition collectibles go like gangbusters. And they don't have to necessarily be the rare variant covers. They can be things like these statues or these toys or, I know that this year, all the Guardians of the Galaxy costumes that they sell for Halloween.
Yeah.
In 15 years, those will be collectibles.
Yeah. Those are all over the damn place. I'm already seeing them. Kids wearing them
My son got a highly detailed Star-Lord outfit for Halloween, and he cannot be more excited about it.
Nice. Let's see what else we got going on. Gotham, switching over to DC a little here. That Gotham TV show got picked up for a full 22 episodes, original order of 13. I guess it did well enough, did really well.
It's done super well. Yeah. 8 million viewers on the first night. And I think the second episode, I haven't watched this week's. I've watched the first three, and it's really gotten good. And we talked about this last time on Comic Dorks because it was right after the premiere. That pilot episode, they did a lot of stuff that was forced. But the episodes after that, the two episodes that I've watched after that, really solid and start to see how they can do a really good story set in the Batman universe without forcing it down our mouths every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I still think that they would have been better off adapting Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker's Gotham Central story.
Mm-hmm.
But this is pretty close.
Well, at least in this case, they can maybe go in directions that won't upset fans of that Brubaker story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose.
Because sometimes that's when you get in trouble. You start doing offshoots or you go, it's like Under the Dome. That would have been a great single series thing that lasted, let's say, 8 episodes or something.
Miniseries. Yeah.
Now they've decided to flesh it out into multiple seasons. And you're like, what are you doing?
They got greedy is the bottom line because the ratings for that were so high that they couldn't walk away from not trying to expand that further.
How's that doing now? Does anyone know how that does?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
I'd never watched the first series, so I can't tell.
Still Under the Dome. We know that for sure.
Help us.
I assume they are. I love the book. I have no idea what the hell's going on in that show. Let's see. That's good. Yeah. Way to go, Gotham. More of that, please. That's awesome. You didn't have it in the notes here, but that Powers trailer came.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll save this for what I'm reading because I have important. You've read that whole or most of the early Powers stuff, right? Okay.
Yeah.
When we get to what we're reading, don't let me forget to ask you this question about Powers because it's perplexing me.
Okay.
Let's see what else. Archie meets the Predator. Oh, geez. These Archie crossovers, Archie zombie, Archie whatever, they sometimes strike me as a little weird and odd, but this one is the oddest, man.
They did Archie Meets the Punisher years ago, and that was a huge success, and people still point to that as one of the craziest crossovers ever and how successful it was. And then they've done this, it really wasn't a crossover, but Afterlife with Archie, where Archie zombies basically invade Riverdale.
I like that a lot.
Man, that was such a good book.
Yeah.
Now they've got Archie Meets Kiss, that happened, and now we're getting the Predators coming to Riverdale.
Wow, that's insane. So
art looks crazy.
Yeah. I mean, is this thing ever going to do its weird little triangle heat vision thing and kill a dude?
Probably.
Is that so? So that's my question. Whether the undead thing was great. Yes. Because it kind of broke with tradition and just went pretty dark. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was zombie horror is what it was.
Right.
And I would hope that this would continue where this would be a straight up Predator story just set in that place with these characters, and they wouldn't be afraid to pick off characters, kill Jughead early, you know.
They probably aren't going to do that. They're probably not going to really kill off one of the main characters, but I'm sure it's going to become a fright run for your life kind of thing. Mm. The solicitation says Archie and friends hit Costa Rica for spring break, where party and beach games soon get replaced by the most dangerous game. What mysterious attractions does the gang hold for the trophy collecting Predator? And will the kids even realize they're in danger before it claims them all?
Yeah. I want Jughead to get his arm blown off and then stand on a hill and shoot with the other guy. Like freaking Apollo Creed.
Yeah,
that's amazing. All right, more on that when it comes out. I'm sure we'll read it here on the show.
Yeah.
Dynamite Entertainment is publishing James Bond comics. Finally, we get James Bond comics. Actually, this isn't the first time. They've been Bond comics in the past, have they not?
Right. Yeah, so years ago, there was the comic strip, the newspaper strip of James Bond, and they were adapting all the Ian Fleming stories. And then years ago, Marvel was producing these oversized movie adaptations of like Octopussy and what was the other one right before Octopussy?
Not Live and Let Die. The other one.
It may have been
Live and Let Die? Oh, I love that one.
Say Never Again.
Oh, Never Say. Crap.
Which technically isn't him.
There's one where the girl, okay, there's a lot of skiing in the one I'm thinking of that might be the one you're thinking of. And I remember the girl in it, the main love interest, there's always like three, but the main one had a mustache. And you could see it in the film.
Yeah.
And there was a big controversy later because it turned out, and Roger Moore was unaware of this, but it was a transgendered individual.
Oh, yeah. That's
who had not let anybody know.
Yeah,
that they were transgender, which, you know, we're talking about the 80s here where people are a little less sensitive to such topics.
Yeah.
And or more, depending on your point of view. And they flipped out, like Roger Moore was all mad. I don't know how any of that, if any of that stuff ended up being true. But during high school, I remember that was like the big rumor, like, oh,
I think that was For Your Eyes Only. Yeah.
Was it? OK.
I think it was
like, yeah, that's your dude. That lady's a dude. And we used to get the VHS copy and like pause it and go, all right, I think I can see a little hair on her lip. And
yeah.
I don't know why it was such a big deal, but. And it was that, because it was that Spy Who Loved Me. It's the song. Yeah, that's totally the one. Anyway, yeah. So they did comic books of that.
Yeah, and Titan Comics has been collecting those comic strips and republishing them. But now, in this new agreement with Dynamite Entertainment, they will be retelling the Ian Fleming books in comic book form, as well as creating a brand new James Bond story that tells you the origin of James Bond's early career.
Wow.
Or the undocumented early years of Bond's career.
I'm into that.
So yeah, definitely things that take place before Casino Royale.
I'm really into that. And plus, just with today's sensibilities, I think it's a much more interesting prospect. I'm looking at some of the art from the original Daily Express strips by John McCluskey and later by Yaroslav Horak, whose name is hard to say, but his art is cool. I wouldn't mind a collection of these. I wonder if you can get this anywhere.
You can get those. They are collected. I think it's Titan Comics out of Great Britain where they've collected these things. And I want to find the exact list because I've got a couple of them here and they're really good.
All right.
They do have the Casino Royale that's collected. And then they have the one that I really liked was on Her Majesty's Secret Service and reading that retold and just looking at the art. Really, really cool.
Oh, but interesting.
Yeah, Titan Books has those.
Interesting, because Titan's got these all collected in the story, the Fleming storyline. So Goldfinger is the November 2000 edition, which is all the collection of the strips that would equal that story, that entire story. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think? I'm just skipping down, seeing if I see a name I haven't seen. Okay. What do you think about a new Bond movie called Nightbird or Shark Bait? That'd be all right.
Better than Pull My Finger.
I guess so. Pull My Finger. Pull My Golden Finger. All right. There's that. That's coming. Guardians of the Galaxy getting animated.
That's crazy, man.
This is very exciting to me. I expressed concern earlier in the week about tomorrow or yesterday, I guess, about whether or not Marvel's up to task when it still comes to animation, direct to DVD or streaming or even, you know, TV stuff, because it just hasn't been as good as what DC had been putting out.
Right.
How do you feel about this as a treatment?
And as I said on the morning stream earlier this week, Marvel can do it if they stick with it. The problem is they'll do a series, a season or two of something, and then they haven't figured out the toy tie-ins or they haven't figured out how to merchandise it right. And so then they cancel it.
Yeah.
with the Marvel's Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. That was a really good series. Had some great continuity going on with it. My son loves Superhero Squad and everything that tied into that. There's this Spider-Man Web Slingers, Web Heroes, something that's going on right now, which is basically the Ultimate Spider-Man. That's going on. The good thing is now the Marvel stuff airs on Disney because that's who they partner with. Instead of it being on Cartoon Network or someplace else, Turner, whatever, now they've got a place where Disney just wants to crank out content so that people are coming to their channel. So this has a chance to go a couple of seasons for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think the look is good. It harkens to the comics and the movies at the same time, which I always appreciate. So yeah, bring it. Sounds really
bring
good
it.
Yeah. Firestorm coming to the Flash. TV show or comics?
TV show.
All right.
So here's
still haven't
the cool
seen
thing.
The pilot. I'm hearing
oh,
great
my
things.
God. I watched the pilot last week.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the best DC television show ever.
Yeah.
Ever. This is better than
telling me. Everyone's saying
excited.
It.
I was excited about Gotham. Yep. I like the first couple of seasons of Smallville, but man, this is awesome. And there's a bunch of Easter eggs thrown in this first episode that was left out. One of them is the fact that in the Star Labs, and this is spoilers for everybody, one of the scientists, her name, she eventually becomes Killer Frost, or that name in the comic books becomes Killer Frost, a villain.
Well,
the other guy, the younger kid, that's the sidekick scientist. His name is the same one as Vibe from the comic strip.
Yeah,
we know that Brandon Routh is coming on to play the Atom.
Yeah,
they did mention in the series that the girlfriend of Killer Frost, Ronnie Raymond, disappeared during this big explosion event, and now we learn that the CW or Warner Brothers or whoever has cast Alias's father, Victor Garber, as Dr. Martenstein, who's the other half of Firestorm.
All right, fine. Victor Garber, isn't that guy? He's like 1,000 years old, isn't he?
Seems like it. I think he's just prematurely gray.
All right.
I think that's kind of cool that they're starting to incorporate all of these superheroes into a show like Flash and Green Arrow, which will cross back and forth with one another.
Yeah, I think this is great. I'm glad to hear that's doing well. And boy, unlike Arrow, which has really picked up and is kind of awesome now, had that kind of slow CW start to it.
Right, right.
This is so good to hear that one of these is launching strong, you know?
Oh, my gosh. You really, if you haven't watched it, Scott, go watch it.
I still haven't.
It's up on Hulu.
I'll watch it today.
It's up on Hulu, so go watch it.
I'll watch it today. I'm going to do it. I'm sick of being so late to these damn things. It's because I'm a plugger, and I'm always waiting for some streamy way to do it, you know?
I'm kind of that way, too. So anytime that there's a new show on, I'm getting it like a day later because I buy a season pass on iTunes.
Yeah.
And so I'll get it a day later, but that's fine. I can go sit down, have lunch the next day and watch the show in 45 minutes and be done with it.
All right.
I'm good with that.
I'm in. All right, let's get on to what we've been reading.
The stolen plans of the Vibrator were destroyed, along with the only two criminals who knew how to operate it.
So I'm powering through Saga, and I'm, of course, loving it. And I'm actually kind of stressed that I'm only an issue away from being done to where we're current, because I just adore that book. There's something about it that just sings to me. It's not for the kids at all.
No, that's
not what attracts me to it, though. I don't know what it is. There's something else at play
because
here.
Because it's stories about human interaction. And even though they're not humans, it's people interacting with one another. Whether
it's
it be
also
the
relatable.
In-laws,
yeah.
In-laws showing up, and you can relate to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
whether it's the in-laws showing up or... in the case for me, having a mixed relationship, a mixed marriage, they touch on a lot of hardcore topics, almost like Star Trek did back in the 60s, touching on a lot of social issues in this series and then wrapping it up into some crazy adventure.
Yeah. And also, there's a lot of sort of pro-war, anti-war stuff happening. Mm-hmm. There's what makes a country, in this case, a planet neutral or not, dealing with like temptations inside of a marriage, and just it's a very it's just so freaking weird. It is such a weird thing, and it works for me, and so I'm all in. And all it does is make me want to like grab all of the other Brian K. Vaughan stuff when I'm caught up and just
you
read
need
it all.
To his stuff is fantastic. I got introduced to him, and I don't remember if it was Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, or if it was the Marvel Runaways series. Mm. But Runaways is really good, the first volume of Runaways.
Yeah. That's all he did, right? He left after that or something.
Yeah, I think he maybe started the second volume. I don't remember. But yeah, definitely the first volume is his best on Runaways.
The Comixology's got pretty much everything he's ever done. And I was a huge fan of Why the Last Man, and that's where I kind of got introduced to him. So I knew I liked that, but I didn't realize the range. So I want to go read his Marvel stuff, his weird offshoot independent things. Like, I just want to kind of just smear myself all over Brian K. Vaughan. That doesn't sound good either. Anyway, so I'm reading that and loving it. I'm trying to read Powers. So I saw the Powers trailer.
Did you start with the first volume?
Yes. So I'm starting with the, what's the name?
Who Killed Retro.
Who Killed Retro Girl, the beginning thing. I'm starting at the top, working all the way down. Wouldn't have it any other way. A couple of things happened. So this is all in conjunction with what I think looked like an awesome trailer for that PlayStation Network produced Powers series. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited. I did not realize that was that Coppola guy, the dude from District 9 in there. That's the main dude. That threw me for a loop, and I really like him a lot. So excited that he's even in the thing. They're also seem to be not holding back. It's, looks violent and languagey, and it looks like it's going to be a good adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Best I can tell. So that made me think, well, gee, Scott, maybe you should read Powers now, because, you know, you need to know what you're doing here before you go see the movie or the show. So I bought some issues, some initial issues. The first six, I think, encompass that first story arc.
Mm-hmm.
I am immediately turned off by the artwork. I hate the art. Yeah,
Michael Yvonne Oeming's artwork is a little different because it's got some hard edges to it. It's not rounded like what you normally see.
Mm-hmm.
He does some things with perspective that I think are interesting.
Yeah.
Where he will use some panels which look like they're shot with a very wide lens, or he'll use something that's shot from well below eye level or way above eye level. And it, you know, I can see where some people don't like it, or it takes some getting used to.
Well, there's kind of a Bruce Timm thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, which I don't mind. I like that. In fact, what's the one you recommended so many years ago that I'd still pick up and read here and there? That giant hardbound.
Oh yeah, that's the Darwin Cook's Final Frontier.
Final Frontier. Ah, I freaking love it. It's got this kind of Art Deco 60s era style to it. I love that style, and I thought I was going to get that here, and I'm not feeling it as much. I don't know what it is. It's just, you know how some people's art is just off putting, and some people love it, and some. So this isn't, you know, it's just me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's working for everybody else. So it's taken a little bit for me to get past that, but I'm having a hard time having the dialogue just grab me. Like, I don't know what it is. Maybe I need to just start over.
Have you read a lot of Brian Michael Bendis' stuff?
Some, yeah, here and there. Did some X-Men stuff and something else. I can't remember, but I'm not,
the biggest complaint that people have generally with Brian Michael Bendis' work is that it's so, what's the word? Wordy
and verbose. Yeah.
he gets out there, and in the way that he's writing the dialogue, it can span multiple pages and feel very sloggy to get through.
Yeah. It feels like a book. You'll look at two or three pages ahead and you're like, man, I'm glad there are pictures.
Yeah. They've
here.
Only walked across the street in these three pages.
Yeah. There is a lot of that. Maybe that's what I'm feeling. And whereas I feel like things are pretty sparse, but effective in Saga. And so I'm coming right off of Saga into that. That's probably the problem here.
And also, you're reading a book that is 10 years old.
I think. Yeah. That's a good point. That thing is 10 years old now. 2000, actually older. I think it's 01 when that, is that right? Not actually sure about that.
I'll look it up.
Anyway, I'm going to keep going. I just had that thought, but I think, excited about that trailer and that series. I think that looks insane.
I think the first volume is probably the best. Mm-hmm. The Who Killed Retro Girl and Role Play and to a lesser extent, Little Deaths is good. But after that, to me, it got really kind of crazy, especially when it got into volume two, where it basically follows Walker from way back in the caveman days. As he's evolving, and you know, he's this Cro-Magnon and going through everything and dying and being reincarnated. It's just really weird.
That is a little weird.
Yeah.
I'll see at the end of volume one, I'll see how I'm feeling and then kind of decide what to do from there. But yeah, the series looks cool. I can't tell the Copley guy, the actor, I assume he's playing this detective.
Yes. Okay. Walker.
If he's playing Walker, Who is the girl? The African American girl is playing who?
That is, that's his partner. And in the book is she's a white girl, Dina Pilgrim.
Okay, that might be.
And so I think they've just
that's fine.
Just found a good actress to play the role.
It's totally fine. I just find myself doing that, going, all right, whose face is whose hair, and I got to match up these characters and see what they're keeping or not. Now we've seen it as a trailer, so who knows what the show will do?
But. Yeah. No. She's definitely, I think they say Pilgrim in there, and she's his partner, and she's got to learn what it. And in the story, you know that she's this cop that's been moved up, and now she's part of the superpowers group, and the superpowers group goes and investigates who's killing superheroes or crimes that involve superpowers, people with powers. And that's where the title comes from.
Right.
I think the most interesting thing about that series is that you've got someone like Christian Walker, who is this former superhero. He's lost his power. You haven't gotten far enough, so I won't spoil it for you. But I think the coolest technology is they throw them in this green room that irradiates something that kills their powers while they're doing their interrogations. I think that's the most fascinating part of the whole book.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Is that they found ways to negate powers. Yeah. Oh, and before people go too crazy, it's DC The New Frontier, not Final Frontier.
Because
I know people are already screaming and already firing up their comment section to let us know.
We're getting artificially excited about a Star Trek comic. That's not happening. that's what I've been up to. What have you been reading?
I have really fallen in love with Lumberjanes. It's now this week the seventh issue comes out, and it's a story about all these very strong female characters, these girls at an all-girls camp, and the crazy, mysterious adventures that they're having. It's kind of like I don't even know what to compare it to, but they're going and they're at this camp, and there are vampires and there are, you know, werewolves and crazy monsters that are trying to kill them. There's a whole issue where velociraptors attack the camp. And at the same time, there's also this thing of maybe one of our characters is more than she claims that she is.
Yeah.
And maybe a reincarnation of like a Greek god.
Oh, weird.
And it's really weird. It's really bizarre. And it really hits. And the art is fantastic. It really hits on all cylinders for me. And I really, really like this book.
I love the art. The art is awesome.
The other one that I just am simply gaga over is Gotham Academy. The first issue came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's basically Harry Potter meets Batman.
Wow.
And it's set at the Gotham's most prestigious private academy, Gotham Academy. And you've got two girls who are going there. One's brand new. One's been there a couple of years. Olive, who's the older girl, is going through her own personal issues somehow involving Batman. And there's some mysterious thing tromping around the grounds of Gotham Academy, and they're going to go find out what it is.
Interesting. Does it feel Harry Potter inspired?
Yeah, it really does. And it's very dark and gloomy. There's no magic, but you know, it is this, let's see this world from a young person's point of view, set in this very gothic academy that, you know, one of the main dining halls looks like, except for the fact that it has a ceiling.
Yeah.
Looks like the dining hall from Hogwarts.
Huh. So how's the...
The story is solid. The artwork is by Carl Kerschel, which is just fantastic.
They have interesting professors and stuff like that. It's always interesting to me.
We've met the head of the academy, and he looks like a cross between, I don't know, someone had said he reminds them of Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
So he kind of has that vibe, but you do get a little flash of some of the other instructors, and they do look like they have their own eccentricities, but we haven't really been introduced to them point blank. This first issue takes place on, the young girl, and I forget what her name is. Forgot her name, but it takes place all on her first day of school.
All right.
Yeah.
She's the Harry Potter, really.
Yeah, kind of. But go read this book, Scott. You will get a kick out of it instantly. And I think you'll really dig on the art.
Yeah.
Carl Kerschel is just
looking at that. Got now, this I like weird. It.
It's got this. He's got this unique style. I first saw him years ago when he did this like Flash backup story.
Yeah.
And I loved what he was doing with speed and lines and form. And I just wanted him to be the artist for the Flash. And of course, then they went with somebody else. And I've just been a fan of his ever since.
Well, that's awesome. Well, excellent. That's what we've been reading. If you guys are interested in telling us about a series you like and stuff you like reading, send us an email, comicdorks@gmail.com. Got an email here. I'm going to read real quick if it'll come up. Here we go.
Sure.
It's the Dresden Files conversation from last week. Josh wrote in, says, just wanted to make a suggestion to you and the listeners who are interested in reading the Harry Dresden books. Scott, I know you're a big fan of Audible and audiobooks in general. I assume he means me. So I just wanted to recommend the audiobooks of the Dresden Files. They're read by James Marsters, with the exception of book 13, and he does an amazing job. I've read the physical books as well, but in my mind, he is Harry Dresden. Thanks for the show and all your comics and all the podcasts. Josh from South Korea.
I was just listening last night at my son's soccer practice, listening to the first book, Stormfront. And it is good. And I really am hooked on Harry Dresden. And I know that the Sci-Fi Channel had a TV series of that a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's worth watching. So if one of our comic dork listeners out there can fire me off a comment on Twitter or something at Major Spoilers to let me know if it's worth watching. I'd like to track that down. But yeah, I'm becoming a fast fan.
Nice.
Of Harry Dresden.
We got one more email from Guy Brown who says, forget Gotham. There's already a TV Batman series out there and it's going into its fourth year. Interesting. Says, I was listening to Comic Dorks the other day and I heard you folks talking about Gotham and how Batman TV show could be pretty cool if done right. Well, you're totally right. There is a show called Person of Interest written by Christopher Nolan's brother. That's actually good. Follows a former spec ops turned vigilante and his computer genius compatriot as they take down crime syndicates and face a recurring rogues gallery of awesome villains. It's basically the first half of The Dark Knight mixed with some Edward Snowden-esque computer intrigue and occasional usage of 80s style action cheese. Think Airwolf, MacGyver, and A-Team for however the topic can sometimes be. It's got your Jesus, Ben Linus, and Mom from 2011's Karate Kid, and there's so much more star power. I've heard of it, but I didn't know that it was kind of a vigilante kind of Batman.
Yeah, it's really weird. I'd heard some things, and I forget, maybe somebody sent me an email after our last conversation, and I went and tracked down the pilot episode. And yeah, it's really cool. It's this computer genius who figured out this way that the computer was tracking people of interest. He doesn't know what's going to happen or how they're going to be involved with something, but he essentially hires a former mercenary or former special ops guy to come in and help solve why this person is of interest. Huh. My understanding is in the second season or another season, they realize that the computer has sentience, and is a full AI. But I watched that first episode and I'm intrigued to watch some more.
Yeah. Well, I'll check it out. He does say it's streaming on Amazon and maybe on Netflix. He's in Canada, so he's not sure on the American version on Netflix, but yeah, Amazon streaming has it.
It's definitely on iTunes.
Oh, all right, cool. Guy Byron, thanks, man. We appreciate it. Emails can be sent to us at comicdorks@gmail.com. That's going to do it for us. Hell of a show.
Wow, that was a lot.
It was a lot, but we swallowed it all. And if we had all four voices this week, we'd be here for another 6 hours because there was so much here to say. Steven, anything happening in your world that people should be aware of before we go?
Over the next couple of weeks, we'll have the voting open for our Major Spoilers costume contest, and we want people to come and vote. And the winner is going to get an iPad mini, so we want as many people to vote as possible. And that's about it for right now.
All right, very cool. Major Spoilers on Twitter. And, yep. Of course, majorspoilers.com. I will be at BlizzCon in a few weeks. If you are going and attending and are in the Anaheim area and you want to shake hands and say hi and hang out, I will surely be there and I will be relatively easy to find. So please check that out. Follow me on Twitter for those details. I'm at Scott Johnson. You can find the show at comicdorks.com. All our previous episodes, subscription info and whatnot are all right there. You can email us comicdorks@gmail.com on Twitter at comicdorks. And we got a shirt on /loot.com where you can buy that supports us as well. And that is a Comic Dorks t-shirt. I think that's it. For more awesome stuff, go to frogpants.com. There's a lot more shows there. I think that's everything. Steven, thanks for hanging out with me, man.
Hey, thank you, man. It was a blast.
Yeah, everybody else should be here next time. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And we'll see you then.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Huh?